Welcome to Night Sky Tourist, a place to learn the night sky, have fun with its ancient stories, meet astronomers and dark sky advocates, and fall in love with the dark. I'm Vicki Dirksen, your host and author of the website and blog, nightskytourist.com. If you've never visited the website, I invite you to stop by after the podcast. Check out some of the great blog articles, browse through the resource page, and sign up for the newsletters. The newsletters have great content that is exclusive for subscribers. Are you ready for an adventure under the night sky? Let's jump right in. This is an episode I have wanted to do for a really long time. And it would have been really fun to do as a 100th episode, but now is the time to do it because there's some really cool things that are about to happen. In this episode, I'm inviting you to the place where I live, Fountain Hills, Arizona. Fountain Hills is on the northeastern edge of the Phoenix metro area, but we feel like we're in our own little community. We have a small mountain range that separates us from the rest of the metro area to the west, a regional park that's connected to a national forest in the north, and tribal lands to the east and the south. And beyond the tribal lands to the east is wilderness. So what that means for Fountain Hills is that we are a dark sky oasis in the Valley of the Sun. Phoenix is the nation's fifth largest city, but our town has a really unique treasure in our night sky. And because of that, Fountain Hills was certified as an international dark sky community in January of 2018. Yes, I live in an international dark sky community. I feel really, really lucky to do so. When over 90% of Americans can no longer see the Milky Way from where they live, and light pollution is growing at 10% a year, I'm lucky. Can I see the Milky Way from where I live? Well, if I go out to the edge of town just a few minutes from my house on a moonless night, I can see a faint glimpse of the Milky Way. So I'm extraordinarily happy that I get to live in this place. In the days before white people arrived here, this area was the homeland of a culture that archaeologists call the Hohokam. Their descendants today refer to themselves as the Akamel Odom and the Tohono O'odham people. They are really well known in this area for the hundreds of miles of canals that they constructed across the entire valley nearly 1,000 years ago. And some of those canals are still used today in the modern water system of Phoenix. And then they also built dozens of Mesoamerican-styled ball courts, including one that's not far from Fountain Hills. The Hohokam constructed a solstice viewing room on top of a platform mound near Sky Harbor Airport in Phoenix. They also marked solstices and equinoxes in the stone at Hole in the Rock, which is a location near the Phoenix Zoo and the Botanical Garden. And they also embedded equinox tracking devices in the extraordinary Casa Grande Ruins National Monument, and left petroglyphs all over the mountains that circle the valley, and even possibly near Dixie Mine on the edge of Fountain Hills. They were sky watchers. So it's really exciting to me that here we are hundreds of years later, and Fountain Hills is filled with sky watchers and filled with people who are dedicated to protecting the night skies here for future generations. I have lived in Fountain Hills for almost 27 years now, and I am thrilled to share this place with you on this episode. But I've also invited some other people to join me in this episode to share Fountain Hills as an international dark sky community. Welcome to this journey into my community. Earning the designation as an international dark sky community is a big effort, And it requires incredible buy-in from town leadership to make it happen. Although the effort was spearheaded by the Fountain Hills Dark Sky Association, town officials had to submit the official application to be a dark sky community. So I want to start your introduction to Fountain Hills by chatting with Mayor Ginny Dickey. She was not the mayor at the time that we received our designation, but she has been supportive of our effort from day one, and she has continued to champion it as mayor. A few months ago, she and her husband visited the Smithsonian's National Museum of Natural History in Washington, D.C. The museum has an amazing exhibit right now called Lights Out, and it highlights the impact that light pollution has on all life on Earth. And Fountain Hills is one of the certified international places that is featured in the exhibit. And so Mayor Dickey was able to promote our community at the museum while she was there. Please welcome to the podcast, Mayor Ginny Dickey.
Well, I just wanted to say first, and I want you to put this on there. I want to say, first of all, congratulations on your induction into the Lower Verde Valley Hall of Fame in Fountain Hills. I mean, it's so well deserved, and we're so lucky to have you here in our community, and you make Fountain Hills so much more special than it already is. And I just wanted to make sure I congratulated you for that, and I look forward to that event in March as well.
Thank you. I appreciate it. So, when did Fountain Hills get certified as an international dark sky community?
Actually, they started it up, I think, in 2017, but became one in January of 2018. I appreciate the mayor and the council at the time having the foresight to work with all of you volunteers and the advocates like Nancy and Joe Bill. That made that happen. Also, was a result of that Fountain Hills Dark Sky Association, and their efforts actually began in 2015.
How does the certification that we got for that set our community apart from other communities in the Phoenix metro area? Because Phoenix is made up of a lot of other communities that surround it. So how does that make us so much different?
Well, as it's been reported at the time, Fountain Hills was the 17th dark sky community in the whole world and the only one in an urban area, like you mentioned. I've said this before, we have that rare distinction of being in a metropolitan area. We're in a region, but we have a sky that's shielded at night. We have the tribal lands, we have the McDowell Mountains. We have the regional park, McDowell Mountain Regional Park, and then the Tonto National Forest. So my little quote that I use is, we're a star-filled oasis in the Valley of the Sun. And with 25 or so other municipalities and such in the valley, we are definitely rare and unique and extraordinary.
From awesome. A municipal point of view, what do you think are the biggest challenges that our community has in maintaining the certification? Because it's not just something we get once and we're good to go. There's an annual report that we have to file every year to maintain that certification. What challenges do you see that we've faced and how we've overcome them?
Well, actually, I see this as a helpful guiding factor. You know, as we consider all manner of planning and development, it's, at least for me, it's been great to have this there to say, okay, does it conform with the guidelines? You know, Fountain Hills had a head start with all this because we are accustomed to preserving the night sky. We really never embraced streetlights around here. To me, the biggest challenge is actually correcting the misconceptions that people have about a dark sky community. You all have done a great job of really pointing those out. One time, I was in this trivia trivia activity where I wrote the questions and the answers. They were multiple choice. It was called the Hip Historian, and I was trying to get people to know more in general about Fountain Hills, but in particular talking about dark sky. So I kind of put this question, you know, Fountain Hills is a dark sky community. What does that mean? And I had, you know, A, street lights are not permitted. B, trees and buildings can't be more than 50 feet tall. Three, all outdoor lights must be off by 10 p.m., including around the fountain. And then I always added like all the above or none of the above. So it was really funny because people would be stumped with that. But the answer, of course, is none of the above. You all get the word out that dark skies do not prevent adequate lighting, do not, present unsafe conditions. We can illuminate athletic fields. We can have our holiday lights and things like that, signage for businesses and all. But it's just great that we get that information out. And again, our development director and all of us are very aware of maintaining those guidelines. And to me, they've just really been helpful, and look to continue doing that.
I can understand this idea of misconceptions because we get a lot of comments from people where we're like, no, that's not really what a dark sky community is. But I remember back in 2017 when town council was about to vote to update the lighting code, and that was the last hurdle we had to jump over to qualify for certification. And I remember it was the night before the vote, and one of the council members reached out to me and said, I just don't know how this is going to help our downtown economically when we have to turn all the lights off at 8 o'clock p.m.
And roll the
Oh, no.
sidewalks up too.
I said, no, that's not what this is about. So it was like a down to the wire still of educating
Wow.
even our council members at that time what it meant to be a dark sky community and how we would make that play out here. So I fully understand that as being one of the biggest challenges.
Yeah,
I'm
for sure.
curious too, though, because I've seen that astrotourism is one of the fastest growing segments of the tourism industry. I have seen several articles come out in places in Canada and England and other places where they're talking about astrotourism trends in 2024, and it's big talk. And so I'm curious to know how you have seen our designation as a dark sky community impact tourism here.
Well, I think it's opened up an entirely unique way of attracting visitors to Fountain Hills and helping our economic development department to put that out there in a big way. Some of the examples are, of course, the festival that you mentioned, which is every March, and that's a huge hit. The attendance is amazing for that. We have, and I think you've led some midnight full moon hikes. We have unencumbered nocturnal animals, which is, one of the benefits of the dark sky. And we do have wildlife enthusiasts who would come for that. We have our astronomy club, which has talks and viewing nights and other programs that are related to astronomy. Ballet Under the Stars, which we were talking about a while ago. Yes, they come in and do our tradition, a beautiful tradition that we have here, which is especially beautiful here. Maybe people who prefer dark skies would choose to move to Fountain Hills, so we can also use it as a way of attracting new residents. Flagstaff, which is actually was the first, I think, officially designated dark sky community. They have, for example, Dark Sky Brewing Company. Fountain Hills restaurants and businesses could develop unique promotional ideas like that. Resorts, Sedaro features dark sky tourism amenities. They've got their lights shielded, and they have parking lot demonstrations and such. Our library has a telescope loaner program, and we've attracted people from beyond Fountain Hills. And I think that this will, I know that this will only increase when we open up our International Dark Sky Discovery Center, when it becomes a reality, and even on the way when it's getting built. And with the groundbreaking scheduled in the next few months, I think that the publicity and the buzz around it is just going to increase this even more.
I love hearing from people that I meet and they find out that I'm part of the dark sky stuff here in Fountain Hills. And they'll tell me, I moved here because of the dark
Oh,
skies. And oh, it makes me so excited when I hear that. And
that is
I've
great.
heard people who lived in the community for a long time who feel like that is actually a deterrent to, especially for younger families, to get younger families to move here. And I tell them, that is not what I'm hearing, though. I've heard several people who've come to me and said, I moved here because I wanted my kids to grow up under the stars.
That's awesome.
Yeah, it is amazing.
Oh,
So my
gosh.
last question for you is, just as mayor of this community, what excites you about representing a dark sky community?
The first thing I think of is all the kind of the attention that we've attracted, and mostly due to all your hard work, the committee for the Dark Sky International, for the center. We have the support of ASU and President Crow, Senator Mark Kelly, who's a former astronaut, as you all know, and Kyrsten Sinema. They've all signed on in support. Local elected officials, governors, including current Governor Katie Hobbs, Representative Ruben Gallego, and a lot of other House members. Some of them even trying to get it in their budget. So there's so many people pulling for us, that creates so much optimism and camaraderie. Everywhere I go, people say things to me about it. How many people get to be part of an exhibit at the Smithsonian, right? That was an experience of a lifetime. Last summer, I was in DC and they called it Lights Out. I mean, I spoke to people from, all the states and from South America and Europe, gave them little fountain pens and, State 48 t-shirts. And, we touched the world there. So I've lived here 40 years. So as a 40-year resident, I never get used to how beautiful and special Fountain Hills is. We're conveniently located. You can get to the airport and a baseball game in no time, but we're actually somehow a world apart. So how can I help but be excited and happy to be part of this dark sky community? We're recognized, like I said, regionally, statewide, nationally, and again, as a result, not only the Smithsonian, but we took a trip, Jim and I, to Ireland and met the mayor of Killarney, and we talked all about dark skies. So we're even internationally known. So it's just simply the best.
That's fantastic. And I want to thank you too, because you have been very supportive of these efforts from day one. And that just means all the world to our community to have from the very top the support and the enthusiasm that you have for all of these efforts. And so thank you to you too.
Oh, you're welcome. It's a pleasure, really. It's I love this town.
Well, thanks for joining us and sharing.
Thank you for doing this.
Now that you've met the mayor, I'd like to back up a little bit, and I want to introduce you to one of the people who is responsible for daring to think that Fountain Hills could be an international dark sky community. His name is Joe Bill, and he and his wife Nancy started this whole thing in 2015 before I ever even got into the world of the night sky. Joe and his wife are the co-founders of the Fountain Hills Dark Sky Association, and Joe served as the president for several years. And today, I am the president of that organization because Joe got busy with a new project. He and Nancy are also co-founders of the International Dark Sky Discovery Center, where Joe serves as president, and I also serve on that board. But I'm going to let Joe tell that story. Well, Joe, thank you for joining us on the Night Sky Tours podcast. I'm very excited to have you here finally.
My pleasure.
So I would really like for you to share with everybody what sparked the idea to pursue International Dark Sky Community certification for Fountain Hills, because you and your wife were responsible for this whole mess.
Yeah, at times it was a mess, but we got there, Vicki. But it all started back in 2015 when actually, I have to give my wife credit, she noticed that all of a sudden, there were a lot of bright white LED lights going in around town, and she really appreciated the dark skies here, and she thought, well, what's happening here? And so what she did is she looked into it and found out that there was an association called the International Dark Sky Association that could designate our community as an international dark sky community. And she said, "Well, why don't we pursue this?" Well, I thought, "Okay, let's look into it." So it went from there to quite an effort that took 3 years, but that's what actually got us started.
And so 3 years is a long time for people to stay committed to an effort like this because everybody was a volunteer and you kept this team going, kept this team going. And then you found me.
I did, fortunately. You know,
Actually,
it
me
was a,
and my husband, yeah.
yeah, actually, that was a wonderful, we won the lottery when we got the two of you on our board. But, you know, you both were so great and are so great. But anyway, it was a 3-year effort, as you know, and we had to do things like update the outdoor lighting ordinance. We had to educate people about smart lighting. We had to do 10 lighting projects. And the most challenging one was actually getting the lighting ordinance changed. And my advice to people who are thinking about doing this for their community is to make sure that they have some people that they know who are on the council or are influential in the community, because it's a tough sell. And we added two former mayors to our initial board, which helped. But we went to planning and zoning, and what happened there is they just didn't get it. What's this about? Is this going to, are we going to have to shut our lights off? What's this going to do to business? Ended up a 0-7 vote, and 7 votes against doing this. Now we had 3 weeks before we were to meet with the council. And we thought, uh-oh, going to council with an 0-7 vote from planning and zoning? Well, I met with a couple of council members I knew, and then went to the council meeting and spent a long time at the podium trying to explain what this was about. It's not going to hurt business. It's going to be good for Fountain Hills, good for our skies. Finally, got a 7-0 vote in favor. And so with that, now we were off to the races. And I think that's about when you joined us.
Yeah, I came in right after that vote happened. So you guys got all the hard part done before I got there.
Well, there were still some hard parts going forward, as you well know.
But the thing is, like, once you got designation, for the town, you didn't even stop there. You were like, oh, I've got this idea. Let's have a festival. So tell us a little bit about that first festival.
Yeah, you know, we thought, what can we do? Part of our mission was to educate the community about smart lighting, and what's one way to do that? We thought, well, why not have some kind of a festival with speakers or whatever? And at the time, there wasn't much to go on in terms of other communities doing something like that. But I found two that did something like a festival. And I did talk to them and get some ideas. And then, with input from you and other board members, we put together a program that included speakers, live nocturnal animals, exhibits. We had an inflatable planetarium at that first festival. We decided to have music and a wine and beer garden, and food trucks. So it got to be a pretty successful festival on day one. But we invented that from scratch. But since then, as you know, it has grown every year. So it's been phenomenal.
I've enjoyed it. I have so much fun at these, and I love after the festival is over, running into people around the community and hearing what they're saying about their experience there. That is so much fun for me.
Yeah.
So then we have the first festival, and here goes Joe saying, "What else can we do?" So then you came up with the biggest, craziest idea ever. So tell us what it was and actually why the project is so important.
Well, I'm known for a few big crazy ideas in my lifetime, but this was a good one, I think. And so what happened was, the again, we thought, with all the national publicity we got from being designated as a dark sky community because it was so rare, so close to a major metropolitan area, we thought, gee, maybe we should build an observatory, or maybe we should have a planetarium and an exhibit hall. And that was the discussion that took place with a group of community stakeholders from the council, from the school district, from the Chamber of Commerce. And we talked about four major components going around in circles at several meetings. And finally, someone said, let's go big or go home. So we decided to go forward with a facility that would contain four major components: an observatory, planetarium, a theater slash auditorium, and an exhibit hall. So that's how we got started with that.
And again, you roped me into that one.
I wish you sure did. Not
I love
wrapped,
this project. What's that?
roped you into
I
it.
love this project so much because there's nothing like this anywhere in the world. And I've ended up primarily on this team with the exhibit hall. And holy smokes, the things I have learned. I look back to like the first day we ever met to talk about how what this exhibit hall should look like, and it's almost like me at my age now looking back to my first day of kindergarten. That's how I feel about what I've learned, what I've experienced, and where we've come, and it's been so amazing. What is at the heart of this facility? Because it's not just there for entertaining people. They'll be entertained, no doubt, but what's at the heart of it?
Well, I think as you and many of your listeners know, dark sky preservation is important. And we believe that with this global movement to preserve dark skies, and with no other facility doing like what we are doing, we'll be at ground zero for this entire global movement. So it is important. It's a worldwide movement. There was an article in today's Arizona Republic just this morning, and they have an article here. It's titled, "Arizona Dark Skies Are Good for Stargazing and Your Health. Here's How." And it also says that right at the beginning, it says, "Arizona is home to numerous places where light pollution is at a minimum. Astronomers are drawn to the state to take advantage of these benefits." So there's no question our facility is going to generate a lot of additional astrotourism, which is another kind of global movement as well. And so we're excited to be a part of that for the astronomy state of Arizona.
I keep seeing everywhere. I've been seeing this for a while, but it's really ramped up over the last 3 or 4 months about astrotourism being one of the largest, or I should say, the fastest growing part of the tourism industry. And I keep seeing articles left and right. And they're not just ones I'm finding because my computer or my search algorithms are paying attention. Other people are sending me stuff about it too. So, yeah, it's really exciting with Arizona being what we like to call the astronomy state that it does. It brings a lot of tourism to Arizona.
And there's no question that the observatories in Arizona really appreciate what we are trying to do. And you know this, Vicki, sky brightness is increasing by 10% per year. And that's eventually going to have a severe adverse impact on the ground-based astronomy in Arizona, which is a $1 billion industry. So we're just pleased to maybe play a role in preserving the dark skies for our astronomy state.
Absolutely. So I already know where we are with this, but I want you to share with our listeners where we're at with funding and when is the groundbreaking.
Okay, where we are now, this is a $25 million project. We have raised $19 million. So we have a little left to go, but the funds keep coming in, and we've decided to make a decision. We did make a decision at a recent board meeting that we are going to break ground. And the ceremonial groundbreaking is scheduled in April. The entire facility will be finished from the outside. It'll look like it's completely done, but there will be some sections that won't be fully furnished unless some additional funding comes in. But we're optimistic because it's continuing to come in, and construction takes a long time. So during that time period, we expect more funds to come in so that we can finish this building.
I'm really excited for this, and I want everybody to know that if you follow Night Sky Tourist, you will get updates to the exact date of the groundbreaking once that date is selected. And then there'll also be all of the links in the show notes. People, you can just go to, click on everything, and they can get over to see your website. There's a couple videos on the homepage that I really encourage everybody to go watch and just have fun. Dig through that website. There's a lot of fun stuff on there.
Well, there's a lot of good stuff on there too, Vicki, because you've taken care of our website very well.
Well, it's been a great cooperative effort. Well, Joe, thank you for joining us. Thank you for sharing about All this amazing stuff. You and Nancy have really been at the forefront of all of this since day one. And I'm appreciative. The people who live here who get to enjoy the efforts are appreciative. And I can't wait to see what else happens. I don't know, Joe. I don't know what else you can do after this thing is built. I mean, are we going to the moon or what?
You know what? Maybe I'll try retiring again.
Oh, well, thank
So,
you. I appreciate your time.
oh, thank you, Vicky. Very much appreciated it.
When I recorded this interview with Joe, the groundbreaking date had not yet been set. But since then, the date has been set for April 8th, 2024. And that's the same day as the total solar eclipse. So the public is invited to this momentous groundbreaking event, and you'll also get a chance to look at the eclipse through a solar telescope and solar glasses that we're going to provide. There will only be a partial eclipse here in Arizona, but it is still going to be spectacular. You can get all the details about the groundbreaking at darkskycenter.org or click on the link in the show notes. But there is another amazing event coming to Fountain Hills before the groundbreaking, and that is the 5th annual Fountain Hills Dark Sky Festival on March 30th, 2024. I was the co-chair for this event in 2019, and then I chaired the event in 2023. And this year, I have turned it over to Al Lorenz. If you live in Arizona, it is worth the drive to attend this event because it really is very special. And there is nothing else like this event in all of Arizona. And if you can't make it to this year's event, then be sure to mark your calendar for the next one, which will be March 29th of 2025. I've invited Al Lorenz to share with you about this year's Dark Sky Festival. So, Al, when is this year's Dark Sky Festival here in Fountain Hills?
Well, Vicki, it's great to talk about the festival because we're going to have it on March 30th. That's a Saturday. It's from 4 to 9 in the afternoon and into the evening. And this will be our 5th annual Dark Sky Festival in Fountain Hills. We had 1 year break in there of during COVID, but other than that, it's been ongoing. So it's pretty exciting. Last year was a great event, and we're looking for even a better event this year.
So tell us what guests can expect when they come to the event. It's going to be held, of course, at the Centennial Circle down in downtown Fountain Hills. But
Correct.
when guests come, what are they going to see? What are they going to do?
Well, when you get there in the middle of the afternoon, obviously the skies won't be dark. So there's a lot of activities and exhibitors that have been set up to facilitate the dark sky story, to have all different generations of people from young all the way up to grandparents. There's activities to cover all that. An example of it is we'll have like the Tano National Monument people come, and they're one of the designated dark sky areas in the national park system. And they love to come down. They bring their telescope down. They bring all of their things down to understand the cultural impact of dark skies long term in Arizona. And that's just one of the activities. And then we have the wildlife for all the different kids and families that want to see that are affected by night skies. We have exhibitors that will have special scientific impact around meteors and all those activities. And then, of course, for those people that just want to wait for the dark sky, they can come listen to the music. They can have great food from 8 different truck food vendors and always have a nice glass of wine or a cold beer from our local brewery and wine company. So, those are just a few of the things.
One of the things I always enjoy watching are the people lined up to do the virtual reality, like a tour across the solar system virtual reality. Because when I look at the lines of people for that, you have like 10-year-olds who are just bouncing around and they can't wait to do this newfangled technology. Well, I suppose it's not newfangled so much anymore, but it's still not real common everywhere. And so you get the 10-year-olds, but then you also have people in their 70s and 80s
Right.
waiting in line for it.
Yeah.
I love watching that.
Well, and the STEM part of our high school system, they're the ones that drive all this. I mean, the technology side of our high school, they're sponsoring that. And like you said, the lines are long to take that virtual reality tour of our solar system. And it's a great experience, along with all of our speakers that are experts in their areas that are coming along too. So.
One of the things I really like at the festival every year is the student art contest. There's a lot of places who do art contests, and I don't know what it is about this one. It's always so different and so unique. What can you share with us about the student art contest?
Well, we're going to have that student art contest again this year, which is exciting because it's K through 12, and we're going to have it again this year. This year's theme is Discover the Night Sky. They come up with the most creative, wonderful art projects to take the theme that we offer up to them and bring it to life. So it's a great activity for families. They get the students involved. And then one other exciting piece, there's over $1,200 worth of prizes to give away for this. So when you're competing in this, not only you're doing it for the artistic side, get a chance to get a little cash prize too.
So we have all of these exhibitors who are coming and activities that are happening. But that whole area there, I call it a campus. I don't know if anybody else does, but
I would agree with you on that.
the campus, it's everybody's involved.
Yep.
So share with everybody a little bit about the other entities who are involved in this with us.
Well, one of the cool things is the Town of Fountain Hills sponsors this with the Dark Sky Association. And then that's part of, the cultural side of our nonprofits in town. And right on the campus, the library, the garden, the museum, everybody is taking part in this. So that whole campus just comes alive there all the way around Centennial Circle. And then on the inside, we fill up the community center with all the other activities, the exhibitors, the silent auction, the school district, and the virtual reality. It's just amazing how many people. And then a big thank you to the Chamber of Commerce and all the various astronomy clubs, including our own Star Dudes around our area, because they're critical to when it gets dark, then that Centennial Circle turns into a great viewing laboratory for night skies.
So, Al, the big question now that everybody's going to know, all this whole big event, how much does this cost for someone to come and attend this event?
Well, that's one of those really important topics. It's free.
Yes.
Thank you. And we have parking lots all the way around. We had over 2,000 people join us last year. We expect that there'll be that number of people again this year because of the speakers, because of the exhibitors, because of the activities, because of the art show, because the whole campus there is taking part in it. So it's going to be a pretty exciting day on March 30th from 4 in the afternoon to 9 in the evening.
Well, thanks for sharing with us about it. And we'll have a link for the website with all the details in the show notes. So everybody can go there, click on it, go check out the festival page. If you live locally, there's a place where you can sign up to volunteer. So we'll have that link there in the show notes.
And thank you, Vicki, for the opportunity to talk about the festival.
There's one more thing that I want to share with you about this festival, and that is our guest speakers. I am so excited to share this with you because of the connection that these guests have with Night Sky Tourist. Our keynote speaker for the festival is Joe Marchant. Joe was a guest on episode 90 of this podcast, and she is traveling all the way from London to share with us about her book, Human Cosmos: Civilizations and the Stars. And our second speaker is Julia Wang from the Cornell Lab of Ornithology. She's going to speak about the impact light pollution has on migratory birds and programs that are helping to protect them. Although Julia has not been a guest on this podcast before, her colleague Andrew Farnsworth was. Andrew joined us in episode 74, where we chatted about light pollution and migratory birds. And finally, Marcia Diane Arnold will be at the festival to do story time with kids. And she's going to read her book, Lights Out, which is a beautiful book about light pollution that young readers can grasp. And she's also going to read her newest book, Armando's Island. Marcia was a guest on two episodes of this podcast. She was a brave soul to agree to be on episode 2, and then she returned for episode 54. I'm so excited to meet all three of these women in person, and so can you. You can get all the details for the festival at fhdarksky.com or click on the link in the show notes. Night Sky Tourist will have a booth there at the festival this year, so if you attend, please come and say hi to me and enter the drawings. I'm giving away a few really cool things. My next guest is no stranger to Night Sky Tourist. Ted Blank has been on multiple episodes of this podcast, and he even did a Q&A segment with us for the first year that we were around. He was actually my guest on the most recent episode, number 91. But I've invited Ted to chat with us this time about the Star Dudes. The Star Dudes are part of my stargazing business that I launched last year. And there are 5 of us Star Dudes, and we offer private and public stargazing experiences in Fountain Hills and occasionally beyond. And our biggest client is the Adairo Scottsdale Resort. But we also get hired for other venues, including people's backyards. But the Star Dudes existed before I launched my business and brought them into it. So Ted is here to share more about this dynamic group of professionals. Ted serves on the boards of the Fountain Hills Dark Sky Association and the International Dark Sky Discovery Center. And he's also the co-founder of the Fountain Hills Astronomy Club. And on top of all that, he is a NASA Solar System Ambassador. Please welcome back to the podcast, Ted Blank. Ted, thank you for joining us once again on Night Sky Tours podcast. You have been on this podcast more than anyone else except for me. Welcome.
Thank you. Great to be back.
So I want to talk about the Star Dudes because I am not the originator of the Star Dudes. The Star Dudes have been around a lot longer than I have been with them. And you were there from the very beginning. So share with everybody a little bit about how the Star Dudes actually got started.
Sure. 4 or 5 years ago, it was Joe Bill, another guest on this podcast, who was in contact with the management up at Adairo back when it had a different name. And they asked us to come up and do a little presentation for a dinner they were having with their management team, who were coming in from Hawaii at the time. So there was an outdoor table set up. I set up a projector and a screen and did a little presentation after dinner. And then, of course, we had a couple of telescopes set up as well. Well, among the management consultants from the folks in Hawaii was a creative guy who said, you know what, I like these Star Dudes, they're really cool. And that was the beginning of the name. We hadn't thought of it until then, but he liked the name, and for some reason it stuck.
And you guys weren't really even a group that was doing this kind of stuff on a regular basis. It was just kind of this one-time thing, right? And he just gave you guys a name.
That's right. What we wanted to do, of course, was to create a relationship with the resort so that we could, sort of continue to build the reputation of Fountain Hills as a dark sky community. And we didn't quite know what direction that would take, but it eventually began to include these periodic and now weekly Friday night gigs on the lawn with telescopes for the guests and the public. And over time, that has become a bit of a lore up there. In the past, there have even been some drinks on the menu with galactic terminology in their names and so on. So it's been a lot of fun, and we've met a lot of nice people.
And they've actually expanded beyond just them hiring the star dudes to come up on Friday nights, because now they recommend the star dudes to their corporate guests. And so we get to go up and do a lot of really fun events and meet people from some very interesting companies. So what kind of responses do you usually get from guests? They come out to the lawn, they look through your telescope, they might think they're going to come take a peek for 20 seconds and walk away. But what ends up being the response that you see?
Oh, everybody turns into a 4-year-old again. And as soon as if you bring your telescope out for the public, that is often, well, that's always my goal, is to release the inner 4-year-old in anybody who comes along and wants to, is willing to look through that telescope and be amazed at what they see. They might see Jupiter's moons discovered, seen first by Galileo 400 years ago. Saturn's rings are a knockout always. But sometimes we spend more times actually answering questions about, well, how do we know how far away things are? Or how do we know that's a star and not a planet? And why is that thing twinkling as opposed to being steady? There's an old saying, I think it goes all the way back to Kepler and Newton, where they would say, everything is shown, but nothing is explained. When you look up at the sky, you can see and you can observe and you can measure, but there are no explanations up there on big LED signs telling you just why or how things are organized. And so it's really taken people like them over centuries, their efforts to begin to dig into the explanations of why do the planets have these certain periodic motions, and why don't the stars do, why do the stars behave differently than the planets, and so on. So when we spend a lot of time explaining things rather than looking through the telescope, I still feel like it's a worthwhile opportunity. And if folks are interested, then that's the direction we go. But for some people, the magic of just seeing these things for the first time through equipment that's well tuned and well operated and knows how to find the thing that you want it to find, is a plus, because some of this astronomy equipment that people are given for birthdays or Christmas can be very difficult to operate. So leveraging our experience with the equipment and the fact that we bring our own gear, which we know will work well, gives them the opportunity to have the best possible experience.
I think you and I have heard a lot of the same reactions when people look, especially at Saturn. What are your top responses you get when people see Saturn through your telescope for the first time?
Well, of course, the number one response is that has to be a sticker on the front of your telescope.
I just got that three times in the last week from different people. Is it just a sticker?
It's so perfect and it's so beautiful and it's so much like the photographs, but when you see it with your own eye, there's nothing like it. I think I've had people say to me, well, I actually had one person say to me, I've been in the hospital for 6 months after an automobile accident, and I just got out today, and this is the best thing that's happened to me in the past year, is looking through your telescope and seeing Jupiter. There are just times when people find it emotionally satisfying and a complete surprise that this is actually possible with amateur equipment to see something so beautiful. So I always anticipate with relish, the responses that we get, and I remember them myself afterwards as a real payback for what we do.
I think one of my favorite memories of doing a Star Dudes gig was up at Adaro, and it was a corporate event, and the group was all men, and they were from all different countries around the world, and they had come for this conference at the resort, It's all dark out there, and I was there with another star dude, and at one point both of us were readjusting our telescopes to look at something different, and it got really quiet all of a sudden, and I turn around and I was like, where did they all go? And so I finally turn all the way around. There were 18 men there, and all of them were laying down in the grass to just look up at the stars. I'd never seen that before. So I was like, oh, clearly it's time to pull out the laser pointer. We'll do some naked eye stargazing now. Oh, I will always remember that because that is the only time that's ever happened. I loved it. It was like you were saying just a bit ago, it brings out the inner child. And it's like it brought out that childhood form of stargazing where you just go lay in the yard and look up. And it was super cool. Ted, thank you so much for joining us again. I know this will not be your last time here on Night Sky Tourist. I always find a reason to bring you back here. But thank you for sharing with us about the Star Dudes, and thank you for what you're doing to help people have magical experiences under the night sky.
Thanks, Vicki. You're welcome.
If you live in or near Fountain Hills, you can hire the Star Dudes. Let us make your next private party or corporate event memorable with the experience of a lifetime as your guests explore star-studded skies from an international dark sky community. When you book the Star Dudes, we bring the party to you. You can get more information about us at nightskytourist.com/stardudes or just click on the link in the show notes. My next guest works at a really special place that caters to both out-of-town guests and local residents. Amanda Brost is the events manager at Adairos Scottsdale Resort, and this resort has taken its location in an international dark sky community to heart, and they've placed it at the center of who they are. We Star Dudes spend a lot of hours there from October through May each year, leading stargazing experiences for both their hotel and restaurant guests, as well as the resort's corporate clients. Please welcome to the podcast, Amanda Brost. Amanda, thank you so much for joining us on the Night Sky Tours podcast. It's really fun to have you as a guest this episode.
Oh, thank you so much for having me. I'm so excited to be on here.
So, we've already been talking a little bit in the podcast about Fountain Hills as a dark sky community and the role that Adairo plays, but let's talk a little bit about what does it mean to Adairos Scottsdale Resort to be in a dark sky community?
Well, I think it just puts us at such an interesting advantage and such a, unique opportunity for guests coming to, Phoenix and like kind of the metropolitan area. A lot of our clients come from, big cities with a lot of light pollution. So being able to be out here and actually see the stars and all of that is just such a unique thing that not many people get the opportunity to do, especially, for corporate stay.
So, what kind of amenities does Adairo offer that's related to the night sky experiences?
So, aside from you guys, we've got telescopes all around the property, including in guest rooms. We have, big, beautiful terraces. We have the lighting around the property that's especially made, for dark sky communities, so they don't offer a ton of light pollution. And just really trying to be, more inclusive with the environment and not have, a spotlight on the property.
Yeah, and so we're talking in another part of the podcast here with Ted Blank, who is one of our Star Dudes. So share a little bit about the experience with Star Dudes just on a regular basis, like your Friday nights especially.
Well, just having you guys on property and being able to have guests just walk up and learn more about the night sky and the stars and, just kind of how small we are here on Earth is just so interesting. And just especially the way, you and your team describe it, it's very interactive. It's very, in terms I can understand and doesn't feel like you're in a lecture hall. So I just think it's a really amazing, lasting impression that the resort has.
And then you, as an events coordinator, you often refer us to your corporate clients who in turn hire us to come and kind of do private gigs there. And what kind of things do you hear from these clients? And like, what makes them choose to do a night sky experience for their big events that they're holding there?
I mean, I refer you guys every chance I get. When, you know, clients are reaching out and they're starting to plan their corporate event, you know, some have never been to Fountain Hills or Arizona as a whole. So they're kind of looking to tie that, you know, aspect into their, you know, sales incentive, their, you know, whatever the reason is for this trip. And this is just such a cool way that you, I literally don't know of any other resort in Arizona that does this, that has this opportunity to have corporate clients see the night sky and have this, you know, private one-on-one experience with the experts. Mm-hmm. So I definitely, every opportunity I get, I always say, like, these are guys you need to reach out to. They're amazing.
I always enjoy, you know, these guests that you guys have in, these client corporate clients, because sometimes those groups have brought people in from all over the world. So it's really interesting to me to get to talk to some of those clients and hear about their experiences with the night sky in other countries. So that's always really fun for me. I enjoy that.
Yes, I was going to say, I mean, I always set everything up and, you know, we have amazing food. We've got amazing, you know, service staff, things like that. But whenever you guys are on property for one of my dinners, that is the only thing anyone ever talks about, which is amazing. And I'll absolutely take it. So.
So then what kind of feedback do you hear from guests when they've interacted with a night sky experience, whether it's the Friday night things that you guys always do, or whether it's your corporate guests? What kind of things do you hear after the fact?
I mean, I honestly just hear mostly how in awe they are and, you know, oh, I got to see Saturn, or, you know, I learned about this. And they're so excited in a way that, you know, you probably wouldn't expect someone to be in that situation. You know, when you hear about, you know, astronomy and, you know, all those kind of things, sometimes, you know, that's not someone's cup of tea, but just the way you guys explain it and your passion and things like that, it gets everyone really excited. And it just, honestly, everyone's always in awe.
I always like sharing star stories from other cultures, because I personally tend to enjoy that a little more than like the heavy science and astronomy and things. And it's really cool because every once in a while, somebody will be from some other country and they will share a cultural star story that they grew up with. I think that's the coolest thing. I love it.
I love that. It just, yeah, it ties us all together, you know, that we're from all over the world and just, we're still under the same sky. And so I think, you know, and obviously all of these star clusters and everything are, you know, ungodly, you know, years old. And so it's just so cool to have something that can bring everyone together like that.
Yeah. I always tell people that I have the best job in the world because nobody walks away angry after they've looked at Saturn or the moon through a telescope.
No, not at all. Yes. You definitely take the cake with that one.
Well, Amanda, thank you so much for taking time to chat with us. I will put the link for Adairos Scottsdale Resort in the show notes so that people can go straight there, click on it, and come over and check out all the amenities that you guys have. You guys have a really special place here, and I can't wait for people to check it out and maybe come give us a visit.
Absolutely. I hope so. Yeah, definitely, you know, hang by the pool during the day and catch up on your star knowledge at night. It's definitely the way to go.
Yeah. Thanks, Amanda. I highly recommend Adairos Scottsdale Resort if you need a place to stay while you're visiting Fountain Hills, or even if you live here and you need a staycation. It has beautiful pools with views to die for. It's got pickleball courts, an amazing spa where my husband and I have enjoyed couples massages more than once. And whether you stay at the resort or not, their Cielo restaurant has delicious food and the best views in the entire town. Now, in case you have not put two and two together yet, Fountain Hills is also the home of Night Sky Tourist. In addition to this podcast and the Star Dudes, I also offer stargazing hikes in partnership with the Sonoran Conservancy of Fountain Hills, and I frequently offer other unique night sky themed experiences. In the past, I have offered things such as a full moon fitness hike, a spring equinox sunrise hike, and I have other great events coming up in the second half of 2024. I'm also in the middle of writing a book about night sky experiences on Highway 89 from Mexico to Canada, and I can't wait to share more about it with you. If you've never been to Fountain Hills, plan to visit Fountain Park, where you can walk on a paved path around the lake and the iconic fountain. When I first moved here, it was the tallest man-made fountain in the world. But leave it to Dubai to take that title away. Even so, it is capable of reaching a height of 560 feet during special events, such as our recent Irish Fountain Fest on St. Patrick's Day. That's when the fountain has turned this gorgeous emerald green color. Fountain Hills is also a great hub for people who enjoy outdoor recreation. Within just a few miles, you can enjoy dozens of hiking and mountain biking trails, horseback riding, kayaking, tubing, and boating, and lake cruises on the Desert Belle at Saguaro Lake. The town has a jam-packed events calendar with multiple events from October through May, and even a surprising amount of events through the hot summer months. We are super close to Phoenix Sky Harbor International Airport, or PHX, and that's only 25 minutes away. And Scottsdale is only 2 minutes away on the other side of the McDowell Mountains. So everything you could want in a major metro city is just right here. For more information on community events, I recommend that you visit Experience Fountain Hills. But for all the events, both big and small, including where to find live music on the weekends, then I recommend that you check out desertvibe.com. You can find links for both of these websites in the show notes. Thank you for joining me on this journey into my beautiful community of Fountain Hills, Arizona. If you plan to visit here, please reach out and let me know. I would love to introduce you to our gorgeous night skies. Thank you for joining us for another episode of the Night Sky Tourist Podcast. If you enjoy the Night Sky Tourist Podcast, please show your support by subscribing to it and giving us 5 stars. Your ratings are really important to me, and they help more people discover the podcast. Be sure to visit nightskytourist.com for great articles and resources. And while you're there, sign up for the newsletter for exclusive content. Until next time, keep looking up.